one of my newsletters in the past few weeks, I mentioned that it was a stonking September for South African investors. And my goodness, that is something that David Bacher, the Chief Investment Officer of Corient Capital, will be taking us through, looking back on the month that was. Nice word there, David. Stonking. It's not used too often here in South Africa, but of course the British use it often. It does, though, tell us about a month that was absolutely fantastic for investors.
It certainly was. And if you just look at it from a South African investor, where the majority of our savings has to be invested, I'm talking about retirement fund savings, in South African assets. You had a very strong equity market, you had a very strong bond market, and you had a very strong rand. So it was a trifecta of things that you need to get right to see a big, healthy return in your valuation statement. So it was a month with certainly a lot of glee.
Well, we've got the presentation up on screen now, and let's kick off with the comparisons, South Africa versus other major markets around the world.
Yes, so as I said, South Africa in dollar terms was up over 7% compared to the world equity market, which is up 2.3%, and emerging markets were up 6.7%. So in dollar terms, South Africa was extremely strong, and then our currency appreciated. So if you add back the currency, we're looking at returns of greater than 10%, a very strong month for South Africa.
Extraordinary. Also helped along, no doubt, by Naspers and Prosus having such a big exposure to the Chinese market, which suddenly got off its knees and started moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. I mean, China rolled out a series of economic stimulus measures that included interest rate cuts, enhancement to liquidity, and they also had some adjustments to their mortgage policies. And these interventions sparked an extraordinary, almost 25% surge in Chinese stock market in just 6 days, a truly remarkable response. The magnitude of this market rally and the positioning of asset management houses is going to be the key driver of which managers outperformed and which managers underperformed. Just a note of caution, while the immediate impact on asset prices was significant, it does take a while for the stimulus to impact the broader economy. So, let's just see what the actual impact will be. But from a valuation perspective, I remember, coming onto this show about 2 or 3 months ago saying it's going to be a big call for asset managers in terms of their positions to China. The market has been depressed for a significant period of time. It was one of the reasons why I spent 2 weeks in May going to see it firsthand, the Chinese market, for as much as I could. From a Corient perspective, very low valuations. And that was a reason why we are overweight and remain overweight.
Certainly paid for your Chinese trip.
It certainly do. I'm going to tell my fellow shareholders that, Alec. It was nice to get that right. But it's still a long way to go. We have been overweight probably a little bit too early, like we do most things. But it was nice to see our positioning pay off.
Wow. Justified and then some. And the gold price, with the ructions in the Middle East again over the last couple of days, gold's got to another new high. There are some who say that it's done too much. What's your thinking?
It's a hard asset class to actually get a hold on. It doesn't give you a yield. It doesn't give you earnings. It's really regarded as a safe haven asset, and it's dependent on, what central banks do. But I do think it's a good diversifier in a portfolio. You do need things that, in case things don't go to plan, in case your investment thesis doesn't work out, in case there is political risk, that you've got different asset classes doing well at different times, and gold is certainly one of those. So it's not a bad asset to hold just from a portfolio construction perspective, but from actually knowing where the gold price is going tomorrow or on the next year, I don't think at Corient we have a strong competitive advantage in that.
$2,600 an ounce doubled in the last 6 years. It's been a good return, and I guess even better in South African rands. When you have a look ahead, though, one talks about price to earnings ratio, and that's what you investment professionals make almost. It's part of your discussion or your jargon or lexicon, perhaps. Just explain what a price to earnings ratio is and where you're seeing it go to and where it stays or where it is historically.
So price to earnings is one of the metrics that a lot of investors look at. It's probably the most popular, and it's really, you know, the price you're paying for the asset relative to the earnings that that asset or company is going to provide you. So if a price to earnings ratio is 10, means that if things stay the same, it will take you 10 years to get back your money because you're paying for an asset of 100, for example, and it's earning, let's say, 10 rand. The higher the price to earnings ratio generally means, you know, the more expensive the asset class is. And you're obviously going to take into other factors like growth, etc., into account. But keeping things very, very simple, you want to buy assets cheap, you want to buy companies that are cheap, and you want to buy companies that generally have a low price to earnings ratio.
So a price to earnings ratio of, say, 16 would be 16 times last year's earnings or 16 years of last year's earnings to get your money back. A price earnings ratio of 6 would mean only 6 times, so clearly, or 6 years to get your money back from what you're paying today. So it's a nice gauge. And where are we right now, David?
Correct. It is a nice game. I obviously simplified it a lot, and it doesn't take into account the growth of companies. So that's a very important thing to consider. But it's a nice gauge to work out where you are relative to history and how markets have responded to buying an asset at a certain PE. And what we show in this graph that you're seeing is that looking at the S&P, the median price to earnings ratio through the history of time is about 16 times. So if you had on average bought at a 16 PE ratio, over the next 5 years, if history had to repeat itself, you got an average return of 9% per annum. Where we are now is at a PE of 21 times. And if you use the same kind of correlations and regressions, and I won't get to that technicality, but on average, in the following 5 years, actually give you a return of 3%. So what are we saying to investors is, you know, be careful of valuations in the U.S. market. And we're not saying that's the case for all markets. We're specifically saying the U.S. market, because if history had to repeat itself, your next 5 years wouldn't be as good of returns. And the S&P and the U.S. market is a large part of the global equities and where investors are, and that's why we're highlighting it.
You can only suggest so much by using data, and exactly that point. If I understand correctly, it means that if you invest today at the current levels of, or the current price levels, if the last 5 years repeated itself, you'd only make a 3% a year return in the United States. It's not really certainly eye-watering in anybody's terms. Moving on to here in South Africa and the 0.25% rate cut that we saw in interest rates, the impact of that on the country?
Well, firstly, you know, I want to express our deep respect for the governor of the Reserve Bank. You know, his commitment to maintaining the bank's independence, you know, has really given him the credibility and the kudos that he deserves. However, no, we at Corian look at last month, and we think it was a missed opportunity. We thought the Reserve Bank could have been more assertive in cutting interest rates. And in our view, we thought the decision to only go 25 instead of 50 basis points was not the correct decision, and certainly not the correct decision for what we think the country needs at this point in time.
Some economists are maintaining that it started in the US, where they were a month late, or 2 months late rather, that they should have cut interest rates 25 basis points 2 months ago, and then they would have only had to do a 25 base or 0.25% this time round. They didn't do it last time, so they did 50 basis points this time. South Africa, in what you've just said now, maybe missed the trick there as well, could have done the same at least of what the US did?
Correct. I mean, the US announced their interest rate cut a day before we had to announce ours. So we had insight into their decision. And I think, you know, looking at our key metrics in South Africa, well, it's terrible unemployment, benign economic growth, and our inflation really well below the target, and our currency performing so well. So, you know, everything was pointing to this is the time, be brave, let's get things kick-started in South Africa, let's try and promote sentiment, growth, etc. And although we didn't expect the Reserve Banker to go 50, we certainly were hoping for it, and we thought it was the right decision.
Having a look at the way that the South African market performed overall, have you got any insights for us there of what occurred in September?
You know, it was just green across the board. Properties, industrials, financials, resources, bonds, equities. It's very seldom that you get everything running at the same time, particularly in South Africa, where often resource shares and financial shares are on the different side of the coin. But, you know, interest rates coming down, good political sentiment, improving confidence, and it was, a great outcome across the board.
And as far as the individual stocks are concerned, who were the outperformers?
The biggest outperformer was Implat, that rose up 25%, a massive increase for such a big company. But just a reminder there, the share was significantly down in August. So you got to take that into account. But it seemed to bounce back, you know, as a result of higher PGM prices, especially platinum. So that explains, we think explains its increase of 25%. And then, as you mentioned earlier, China had a spectacular run, and Naspers and Prosus obviously were positively impacted by that, and they were up jointly about 14%. And then maybe BHP is worth noticing that, worth mentioning, they were up almost 13%, given the improved stimulus from China and the rising prices of iron ore. So big shares really posting some big returns.
Yeah, in the resources sector, as you mentioned there. But platinum has been under the cosh for quite some time. So it was just a matter of time before it turned around. On the other hand, not everybody had a good month. We had the results from Sasol. I thought they were quite good, but it doesn't appear as though the stock has reacted well enough to that. And I guess the oil price coming under pressure, although in the last 24 hours, as we talk now, early October, it's bouncing back again very rapidly. But Sasol had a pretty difficult month. It wasn't the only one.
Yeah, Sasol, Aspen, Anglo Ashanti, Gold, those are the three worst performers. Pretty much all of them are as a result of releasing results that were worse than market expected, some write-downs in Sasol, the poor oil price, challenging economic conditions. I think Aspen was probably the worst performer. It declined 17%, pretty much straight after they released results, and they fell short of the guidance they'd given the market. Headline earnings per share fell 3%. So, you know, they were particularly under pressure during September.
And take us through your thoughts on the whole Eskom saga. There was a lot of celebration at the BizNews conference when the chairman of Eskom explained that load shedding is probably behind us now. And he said his next task will be to bring costs under control. Well, it isn't something that we're seeing on the horizon at the moment. Eskom asking for a very large increase in its pricing.
Correct. I mean, they proposed what we've been reading, a 44% increase. I don't think they'll get that, but that's what they're proposing. So, you know, that has a big impact in terms of costs of goods, cost to the consumer, etc. So it's something that we just need to be aware of. We obviously are having some good news over the last few months, and there's always going to be some things to worry investors. There always is. I think the increase in energy prices in South Africa remains a concern. But having said that, you know, let's be happy and grateful for the fact that we have many, many days of no load shedding. So at least from that perspective, I think we can all be very happy.
I suppose the problem here, David, is that with Eskom, they supply so much of South Africa's electricity to the industrial areas, to the mines. And if the economy is burdened with another huge increase, it's going to make things even more difficult for those companies to produce profitably. And as a consequence, that could mean more layoffs and less money coming back into the economy. It really is a dilemma. But on the other hand, at least we do now know that there is enough electricity to go around. We don't have to do without for extended periods of the day.
Correct, 100%. I think also we need to take note that, you know, it's been a number of years of Eskom having difficulties, and at least a lot of companies and corporates have spent a lot of money in terms of trying to be a little bit more self-sufficient. That comes at a cost, and that's not great. But I think a lot of companies have started to position themselves to be less dependent on Eskom. So maybe the impact going forward and the reliance will be less. But having said that, it's still very reliant. It's still a very big part of the cost base of a company. So it is something that we need to monitor closely.
When you have a look ahead from Corian's perspective, after such an incredibly strong month in September, how are you seeing things?
It's definitely going to be a month of volatility, and I think what's happening in the Middle East is going to be the big decider of asset class returns. No one likes volatility, no one likes war, no one likes uncertainty, especially investors. So it's very hard to see things out for the month because of these events. I think our investment premise is always based on the longer term at Corian. We still think South African assets are cheap. We still are concerned about America in terms of its valuations. And we still think China, given even though it was up 25%, given how it has underperformed for a decade by so much, we think that's still got runway. So we, in short, underweight the US and largely overweight everywhere else, and think you can find value in the world elsewhere.
And in South Africa in particular?
I think, the markets have been up about 30% over the last few months. That's a significant rally. But you're still having shares, banking shares, that are giving you dividend yields of 7, 8%. Historically, that is extremely cheap. So we'll be favoring financials and insurance companies and also some SA Inc. sensitive stocks. Although it has rallied hard and a lot over the last 12 months, you've got to take a look going forward. These companies, we believe, are still priced at attractive valuations, and we believe they got runway.
So it's almost as though they'd gone so far down, now that they're lifting their heads off the troughs, doesn't mean that it's over. It could just be the start.
Correct. You never want to buy too early and then wait for this moment, which we've been waiting at Corian, and then trim, just in the first lap. And we think it is the first lap of potentially many more laps. We are positively positioned for South African assets. So, our hope is that the party has started, but it's still going to be lots to enjoy, and we're not leaving the party too soon.
David Bacher is the Chief Investment Officer at Corian Capital. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.